Welcome to Middle Grade Mavens, where two author mums discuss their favourite middle grade books, provide recommendations, and share insider industry tips for authors trying their hand at middle grade. Julie Ann Grasso is the author of the Frankie DuPont mystery series, cupcake enthusiast and part-time library book wrangler. Pamela Ukerman is a writer, dancer, and homeschooling mum who sometimes finds time for sleep. Both Julie and Pamela devour middle grade books, not only for research, but to share with their combined brood of four munchkins. Hi, Pamela, and welcome back to Middle Grade Mavens for our 83rd episode.
Hello. Hi, everyone.
What's been happening?
Well, it's the school holidays, which means no homeschooling, but it means no homeschooling. And because we are starting a bathroom renovation next week, I have been spending almost all of my time running around doing that sort of thing and organising the boys' social lives so they can see their school friends. And it's birthday season in our family, or in my husband's family, and the cold weather's hit Melbourne, so which is, you know, kind of nice. And thankfully this year we can do all those fun winter things that, going to the footy. I've been dragged to the footy a couple of times.
Oh, wow.
And, you know, some warm fires and hot chocolates and things. So, yeah, it's nice. Sorry, it still feels so nice to get out. Like, we had a friend over yesterday. We had some friends over that we haven't seen for a while. And just sat and chatted. And it was like, this still feels new. Feels
what novel. Magic so, is this? Yeah.
Yeah. It was awesome. So, what about you, Julie?
Well, I have an exciting new position at the library. I will be relieving one of our children's librarians doing story time and baby bounce. And I get to do sort of collection acquisition and maintenance for the next 6 months. So it's safe to say that I'm beside myself starting Monday.
Dream. Starting Monday.
Dream. Absolute dream. Yep.
Right in there now.
Can't wait.
So fun. I'm so happy for you.
Yeah. It's only 4 hours, 4 days a week, which is just perfect for me. So.
Yeah.
Tell us, what is the title of today's book?
Books. Yes. Today I'm doing two. The first of which, I think I posted on Twitter a couple of days ago how I'd read two amazing books and now my book writing mood is why bother. I'm still writing, but you know, you just sometimes you just go, oh, I just wish I could do this.
Oh.
Anyway, so the first of which, and I'm being pretty tough on myself, because the first one is The Vanishing at the Very Small Castle, which is a Butter O'Brien mystery, and it's by Jackie French. And it was published by Angus and Robertson Books, which is an imprint of HarperCollins, on April the 7th, 2021, this year.
Oh, would you share the jacket blurb with us?
Yeah. It's 1932, the height of the Depression, and Butter O'Brien and his friends have another mystery to solve. The Very Small Castle is home to Butter O'Brien, his father, three aunts, friends Gil, Olive and Tish, and their dog, Woofer. But now there's also a monster at the castle. When glamorous film actress Delilah Devine vanishes in the middle of filming on Howler's Beach, the police suspect her co-star, the war hero actor behind the movie's villainous monster. But soon, even more strange disappearances leave the police baffled. It's up to Butter to solve the mystery of the vanishing film star, but can he crack it before it's too late?
Oh, what? I don't even know why I need to ask this question, but what genre would you class this as?
Well, it's middle grade mystery, but I'd say it's also mystery / historical fiction because it's set during the Depression. Yeah.
It sounds delicious. And what is the estimated word count?
I think it's about 35K, so it's not very long. So it's ticking all of your boxes,
Julie's perfect book. Tell us about it.
Yeah, so I don't know how this one has escaped our notice before, but this is actually a sequel to the first Butter O'Brien book, The Ghost of Howler's Beach, You haven't read that, have you?
No, this
No,
how did this escape us?
I do not know. But I do want to read it now. So anyway, when there's a knock on the front door of the very small castle, the last thing Butter expects to see is a monster. But it's not a real monster. He's a man who thinks he's a monster. He's big and scarred from World War II, and he's taken on a Frankenstein-like persona, which is perfect for talking movie makers Rose and Marigold Marvell. In fact, they write the movie specifically for him to have a part so that he can leave the freak show at the circus. And they would like to borrow the very small castle as a setting for some of their movie scenes. Aunts Elephant, Peculiar, and Cake, which are quite odd names but are actually nicknames, they agree on to lending the castle, but on condition that Butter, Olive, and Tish are included in one of the scenes. The children are very excited to be in a moving picture. But when the star of the show, the glamorous Delilah Devine, disappears almost in front of their eyes on Howler Beach, the filming is stalled and the police are baffled. Luckily, Butter knows the ground so well and was there when Delilah disappeared. He has a head start on the case and gets cracking on solving it. And of course, I'm not going to spoil the mystery for you.
No, it sounds so good. And
It is.
what was your overall enjoyment?
So I'll just start by saying, for our overseas listeners who may not have heard of Jackie French, Jackie is practically a national treasure here in Australia, having written over 200 books, including some absolutely fantastic books on gardening, which I have, and they are my favourite
Yes.
books on edible gardening. And she's also written books and literary papers on ecology, including wombats, which she has studied extensively. And if you follow her on Facebook, you'll see that they practically live with her. She was the Australian Children's Laureate in 2014-15 and 2015 Australian Senior of the Year. Her contributions to both ecology and children's literature are simply astounding, and I can only hope to achieve half of what Jackie has achieved in her amazing lifetime.
Yes.
Anyway, so on to the book. As you can tell, I loved it. This was a charming mix of mystery, history, colourful characters, food, food, and more food.
This is my dream book.
I know. I was reading
Because
it and thinking of you, but
I put food in all of my books too.
oh, I just wanted to go to the castle and eat the food,
Oh,
you know.
yes.
Oh, she's so good. She is a masterful writer, as we already know, but I was just awed by this book, and I hadn't actually read any of her middle grade novels before. I'm not sure how, but just hadn't. But I have read, plenty of her picture books. She mixes suspense and humor with historical facts in such an engaging way, and none of it is vanilla. The writing is so alive and vibrant. And did I mention food? So much cake and pavlova. Oh my gosh. And there's a wombat. Of course, there's a wombat.
Yes.
Had to be a wombat. And I loved it. And as mentioned earlier, I want to go back and read the first Butter O'Brien mystery. And I should mention that you can read this without having read the first one, but it would help to introduce the characters more fully, I think, if you did.
Yes.
Yeah, and also something that we have been talking about recently, in the last couple of episodes, I think we talked about author notes at the back of the book. Suzanne Gervais did this, Kate Foster and Nikki Greenberg. I think there was another one in there somewhere. And so there are also author notes at the back of this book, which talk about the various historical factors that are mentioned in the story, elements of World War II, the Depression, movies, and some of the more local topics like SOSOs, which are sustenance camps, I think they were
Oh,
called.
yeah.
They were nicknamed SOSOs. And there are also some 1930s games to try, and of course some recipes. I just love this, especially with historical fiction, because it just allows the readers, not only the children but the adults too, to find out more
Yes.
without, without interrupting the flow of the story. I actually didn't know what a SOSO was, so I had to look it up, and I sort of flicked to the back and thought, oh, has she got notes? Oh yes, she's got
Of
notes.
course, yeah.
Great stuff. Yeah, loved it.
Oh, and who will love this book? What age would you recommend it for?
I think it's perfect for about 8 or 9 and up. It has a lot to offer, and it isn't too long. There is a little bit of darkness around World War II, but it's not too bad. It's quite you know, quite delicately handled. Joke Boy ended up reading, and he's eight, he ended up reading The Detective's Guide to Ocean Travel, which is quite long actually compared to this one. But yes. He loves mysteries, so I'm hoping he picks this up. But I might actually buy him the first book first so that, you know, he can start from the beginning.
I will have to see if it is in our library, and if not, I will have to acquire them.
Yes, I think you will.
Yeah. Oh, it just sounds so great. Oh, I can't believe I missed this one. How?
Yeah, I know. I don't know. Yeah. I'm not sure. And it's sort of The Ghost of Howler's Beach. The name actually does sound familiar, so we must have just not been able to fit it in at some stage. And
I pride myself as a mystery sniffer. I can sniff them out. And
yeah. Anyway. Well, you know, it's not like Jackie's books really need a lot of promotion because, you know, they sell because, you know, but it is nice to know, you know, who they are suited to and you know, to be able to recommend them for certain situations. So that's one of the reasons I sort of agreed to do it.
And in the word count that I love, which I think I told you, I went to Giselle's school end of term because they, you know, want us to come and see the classroom, and I could not believe, and I'm not, and I say this like in the best possible way, but there were so many picture books in a grade four classroom and like a lot of the you know, novels were very much junior fiction, and it's a state school, not that that means anything, but I was just so surprised. But also, I mean, I love picture books and I think they should be in a grade four classroom, but it just made me really think, oh, you know, kids are really, they're still really struggling to read at nine for some kids, like especially you know, from what I can see in her class, there are kids that are really struggling to read still. So there's such a wide range of readers in this age group, in that eight to nine age group, isn't
there? It's a big jump grade four.
I
think the other thing is that one of the reasons why they would have more picture books in the classroom is that they're just quicker to read for the teacher to read aloud. They're sort of, they can do it, you know, one or two in a session rather than a novel.
So that's, and lots of nonfiction, which is not, you know, not surprising, but even all the, you know, the novels were very much junior fiction, like lower middle grade, as would be suspected, I guess, but not a lot that would challenge her, which is fine because we have an entire library at home and lots of books from the Mavens. So, and an entire library service that I work in.
That you work at.
And constantly bring books home. So I think we're okay. But
That's right. Yeah, I've not actually bought any new books for a while. I haven't had any deliveries that I've actually ordered. I've just made a big drop off of box of books to Cabinet of Kindness, which is like a little free library on steroids down the road.
Good.
So and we've picked it. We managed to pick up a Elizabeth Honey book. And the boys absolutely loved it. So I bought 45 and 47 Stella Street, and they're absolutely loving that now. So.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So that
was book
really
was cool. Meant to come to you. Yep.
That's right. Exactly. So anyway, let's move on to your book for this episode. What are you reviewing today?
Today I have The Golden Tower by Belinda Morell, published by Puffin on March 2nd, 2021.
And would you share the back jacket blue with us?
Yes. In her wildest dreams, Sophie never thought she might be kidnapped by a cat and taken to a world of flying horses and wonder, but also magic, mystery, and danger. Transported to the land of Tusia, Sophie accidentally saves the daughter of a wealthy family and is swept along on their journey to the Golden Tower. Now she is the only one standing between sisters Isabella and Bea and the terrible fate their stepmother has planned. Sophie doesn't think she is brave enough, but with the help of a talking cat, a stable boy, and some very tiny mischief makers, she might be able to save the day.
That sounds like there's a lot in there. What genre would you class it as?
Yeah, I'm going to go with a middle grade magical realism in a historical setting.
Ooh, this is my kind of book.
My favorite too.
apart from mystery.
Well, there you go. And what's the estimated word count?
I'd say this is around 50K, but okay. As we know, we're terrible at actually really knowing. So
plus or minus 20K.
Plus or minus, yeah.
So could you tell us about, please?
Sure. Sophie goes to visit her Nana in Kentish Downs. Upon exploring the Roman ruins, she follows a most annoying cat, whom she swears she heard talk, into a crevice which transports her to a magical land called Tusia. There she meets Bianca and Isabella and their cousins Leo and Nico. They all live with their Nuna, but life is about to change as Bianca and Isabella's stepmother, Ginevra, comes to claim the girls to take them home to their papa's house. Sophie, unable to find her way back to her time, accompanies the girls along with Leo and Nico, but not everything is as it seems in Papa's house, and Ginevra seems to have the ability to bend water to her will. Sophie is stuck in a place she cannot even fathom, but she rises to the challenge and takes on the task of being a lowly maid to Isabella and Bianca. She longs for home, despite the memory of school and all its difficulties, for Sophie has dyslexia and she is bullied at school for the fact. She might have trouble reading, but she certainly doesn't have trouble noticing things, and Sophie soon sees some very odd behaviour from Ginevra. She might not be great at reading long books, but she can read labels like arsenic and lead, and she knows those compounds are poisonous and dangerous. Ginevra seems to be an apothecary of sorts, always mixing up draughts for the Duca. But that's not all. She seems to have bewitched the whole household, bending everyone, including the Duca, to her every whim. When it appears Ginevra has plans for Isabella to wed at only age 14 and Bianca is poisoned by the Duchess's soup, Sophie is in the fight of her life and the lives of her newfound friends.
This sounds like something that could be 80,000 words rather than 50,000 words. Sounds very complex.
Yeah. Yeah, it might have even been 60, but yeah, it was really brilliant.
Right. And so overall enjoyment, let's go for it.
This was an intricate tale full of step back in time details in the magical land of Tusia. The setting was vibrant and authentic, and I really did feel like we had stepped into a Roman castle, complete with the delicious food and a household full of lively staff. The inclusion of the meddlesome little people in the Mazza Morellis added so much chaos to this tale, along with Baccio, the talking cat, who Sophie was never quite sure which camp his loyalties lay in. Sophie was endearing with her gentle and caring nature, fulfilling the wishes of Isabella's Nonna by accompanying the girls into what we suspect Nonna knew would be a perilous time. Ginevra was villainous, and it seemed that Sophie would never prevail with such a formidable enemy. Keeping her wits about her and continually putting her friends above her own situation, Sophie found the courage to rise above her perceived failings and her learning difficulties to cleverly defeat the treacherous Ginevra. The ending was very satisfying, and I was sad to leave the world of Tusia. Belinda Murrell has clearly poured her heart and soul into researching this delightful story, and the cover by Federica Fenner was truly enchanting.
It was. I love that cover.
Yeah. It's
beautiful. So who will love this book? What age do you think it will be for?
I'd say this is a borderline upper middle grade, to be honest. Mm-hmm. Okay. There were so many intricate details and themes, so I suspect kids aged 10 plus would most likely enjoy this.
Okay. Sounds like it's bordering almost on a complete fantasy world. So.
Yes, yes. Definitely magical realism, in other words.
Yeah.
But really beautifully done. I was sort of thinking, oh, because I felt like the story really did close off. Like, is she going to write another one? We'll have to see. Who knows? Ah. Maybe Sophie will return.
Okay.
Mm.
Interesting. Keep an eye out.
That's good when you left sort of thinking, oh, when's the next book coming out? Even though you don't even know if there is one.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Well, speaking of sequels and trilogies,
Yes. What is the title of your next book?
yes, so this one is The Stormkeeper's Battle by Catherine Doyle, published by Bloomsbury in Australia on March the 30th, 2021.
Would you share the back jacket blurb with us?
Yes. Fionn Boyle, Stormkeeper of Arranmore, is facing the fight of his life. The terrifying, all-powerful sorceress Morrigan has been raised from the dead and has sealed off the island from all help. Fionn is the only thing that stands between her and a dark future. He's got to find a way to defeat her. But there are some terrible choices in store for Fionn as the dark sorcerer begins to take his nearest and dearest for her own. With only two candles left to burn, will Fionn master his powers in time to stop her?
Oh, and what genre would you class this as?
Well, I was going to say fantasy, but no, I think it's more magical realism mixed with mythology. I think that's what I. So I reviewed, and I'll talk about this in a minute, but I reviewed this, the second book of this, a couple of years ago, and I think I did say magical realism,
Yeah.
mythology. So yeah.
I think every time I say it's a fantasy, I always have to ask you what the fantasy definition is. So if you can't remember, then.
Well, yeah, because I've written it down here as fantasy, and then I'm thinking, no, because fantasy is normally set in its own world, like in a fantasy world,
Yes.
where you've got a whole
Yes.
lot more world building, whereas magical realism is usually set in the real world but with magic in it,
Yes.
which is what this is. It's got magic in it and mythology,
Yep.
but it's set in the real world. It's literally set on a real island. So
Yes. Yep.
yeah,
All
that's
right. We're going to call it magical realism then.
Let's do it.
And what is the estimated word count?
I'd say it's about 50,000 words, which I think is ideal for this series, and it was all over too quickly. So,
Oh.
yeah, it didn't feel
So tell us about it.
that long. Yeah. So, this is the final book in the Stormkeeper trilogy. And as I said, I re reviewed the second of it way back in episode 29, and I can't believe it's been that long. So if you want to know more about the series, go back and have a listen to that episode because I did ramble on a bit about the mythology. And I also reviewed the first book for the Children's Book Council of Australia, their Reading Time website, when it first came out. So that's how I know about the series originally.
Yep.
Anyway, the name says it all. It's Arranmore's final stand against the ancient Celtic sorceress Morrigan. Fionn's grandfather is gone, and now he is the Stormkeeper, the one who holds the magic. Morrigan has been freed, and while they have the Tide Summoner, it isn't long before Morrigan takes it. Fionn's magic is coursing through him, but he still doesn't know how to use it, and Morrigan is growing stronger, making more soul stalkers. The residents of the island of Arranmore, the old families and the new, are ready to take up arms and fight not only for their island, but for the world as they know it. Fionn must delve back into everything he knows, everything his grandfather taught him, and perhaps even Arranmore's past, to find the strength to stand up to Morrigan and her brothers. It's a fight to the very last, but his friends are behind him, leading the Patton, Macaulay, Cannon, and Beasley clans with their ancient weapons in tow.
Oh, it sounds so intricate, doesn't it?
Possibly because of the way I wrote it, but
Oh,
it's
but like the
no.
world is, she's still built a world, hasn't she?
Yeah, I
Yeah.
guess there's this sort of mythology layer on top of the real world, which,
Yeah.
it's this is the third of three books,
Yes, of
and it's the
course.
the big climax. So it's all been built over to other books, but yeah, if you've read it, it's not that
Yeah,
complicated.
exactly.
Yeah.
Overall enjoyment then.
Well, as you know, Julie, this is one of my all-time favorite middle grade series, and this was a huge and much anticipated final installment, and I didn't want it to end.
Oh.
It vaguely reminded me of, because this is the Stormkeeper's battle, and it vaguely reminded me of the Battle of Hogwarts in Harry Potter, because you have these teens stepping up to battle the enemy. You have the shy hero finding his full power. And just, you know, all that comes around that. And the characters are so relatable and so familiar by the end of the trilogy. You really get caught up with the emotion of it all. The character of Morrigan was a mere shadow in the first two books, sort of more a possibility than a reality. And while there was magic in the previous books, it really came to the fore in this one. I felt that this was more magical and more tension in this one as well.
Yeah.
There are themes of family, loyalty, self-belief, and the true nature of courage all wrapped up in just absolutely beautiful storytelling and fascinating mythology. And not only do I have a book hangover now, but I also have a series hangover.
Oh, yes.
But I also got to chat to the author, Catherine Doyle, which was amazing. And that will appear in next week's episode. So that was really the icing on the cake. Do you know how wonderful it is to be able to directly ask an author whose books you love about, you know, why they wrote them and where they came from?
Oh, yes.
I love my job. That's not a job.
Yes. We love our faux job.
That's it. You know, when my kids say, oh, Mum, you've got to work, or, you know, friends ask me, how's work going? Oh, they want my faux work. Faux work's going good. Yeah, I was just, love it. Love it. And she was lovely and just amazing to chat to. So,
and who will love this book? What age would you recommend it for?
It's a great entry into longer middle grade fiction, into fantasy and into mythology, as it's so accessible and beautifully written. The previous books were pegged at about 9+, and this one would be as well, although it's just slightly darker and more mature, you know, and I think it sort of aged a little bit with you know, the reader. And The Stormkeeper's Island came out in 2018, actually. So Manga Boy would have been only 7 then, but I realised while reading it, he's 10 now and probably will really enjoy it. He doesn't have a lot of stamina for novels, but I think in particular he would really love this third book. So I'm going to encourage him to give it a go from the start. So, yeah.
Yes. Well, I was just thinking Giselle would have been 6. And she's right up for it now. I have to get the first book and start her on the journey, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Well, that's it for our reviews. So look forward to Catherine Doyle interview next week with Pamela.
Thanks for stopping by Middle Grade Mavens. If you'd like to know more about the Mavens, log on to middlegradepodcast.com, or to find Julie online, stop by julieandgrassobooks.com. And to find Pamela, stop by www.ukerman.net.